This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast or on Instagram at botfpodcast. We're continuing on with our creativity series. We're here with Mike Domini, who is an actor, an improv actor, and we met in college. And I have to share this because it's too funny. Probably one of my worst college memories revolves around your head.
Oh, my. this is new information to me.
It was imaginary invalid, and yeah. You had a cap that was iconic, apparently.
And I did. I'm in pajamas, old fashioned pajamas, right? So it's like a nightcap.
Yeah. And Don had this specific thing that he wanted, and I was not understanding what he meant. And I think I spent 6 hours on this crazy, like, curly cap because he wanted it to be very whimsical. And I spent all this time. I was super proud of it, and I handed it to him, and he just looked at it like, this is not what I wanted.
Oh, no. My head was the source of much frustration.
Yes,
very much. I didn't even know. Wow. Well, on behalf of, 12, 13 years ago myself, I apologize for that.
Has it been that long?
I think it has. Let's not do the math. Let's move on quickly before that sinks in.
So basically, we met in college doing theater, and I don't think we were ever on stage at the same time.
I don't think so.
But just running into each other and lots of mutual friends. And since then, you didn't have a theater major, though, did you?
I did not. No, theater minor, but a communication major, which they say will equip you for every sort of job. And in some other senses, it makes you specifically skilled for no specific job. But hey, you learn to make it work as a communication major. So here I am doing improv.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? That wasn't a really great intro, but I feel like that's a good segue. So tell us how you went from communication major in college with a theater minor into improv. As your job.
That's the funny thing is I never saw myself as an improv person. You know, the kind of personality that you can tell, like, they just improv their way through life. Like they don't make plans, and they're really frustrating to be around and make plans, because it's like they seem to make it work, but it just drives you crazy as a planner. And so I was always the planner. And so I did, as we talked about, scripted theater, and I was on the speech team, and I just avoided the impromptu category because I was like, I don't want to deal with that. That just seems stressful. And so, I've always been the non-improviser type. And so I got an email after graduating from college from a guy who runs a improv comedy ministry. And he had been looking to replace some guys on the team, and he was emailing Christian colleges and their theater departments and looking for someone who could maybe fill in and do this job of traveling improv ministry. And so that email got forwarded to me, and I was like, I don't know, improv, that just sounds scary, and I could probably get a real job. And no, there were a lot of doors closed, and I was left with that email. I was like, okay, well, I mean, I like performing. Let's do it. Let's see. It'll be fun. And so that's what got me into it. I don't even know why I got hired for the job, to be honest with you, because I didn't have improv experience in college. I mean, I did stuff on stage, but through some conversations, it was just clear. Like, it was one of those things that God was just kind of orchestrating. Like, you're not qualified for this. That's how I get the glory for it. So it's like, okay, God, we'll do it. So it just went from there. And now it's been 9 years. On the road with 3-2-1 improv.
Awesome. And we'll put the link in the show notes too if people want to check that out. So acting is your beginning. How did you learn about your talent in acting?
Well, I always think about doing plays in high school and college, but it really started in elementary, just doing little Easter type plays, you know, and I was Jesus when, actually, I was not even Jesus. I was like the substitute Jesus for when the Jesus was sick. And I think that's when it's like, oh man, I really like this. Not being Jesus, I mean, but being on stage and climbing up on the cross there with a little bands around my wrists to help them stay up. And even did like a Jonah play where I wasn't Jonah. I don't even know what I was. I was like, it's like some kid like talking about the story of Jonah. I don't even remember, but it was those early experiences there. Those early experiences that, that really got me excited about specifically in those circumstances, communicating the truths of the Bible in a creative way. And I was like, oh man, this is pretty good. And people said, hey, you did a good job, which, you know, I guess, what else are you going to tell a fourth grader in a play? But I appreciated it anyway. And then just found more and more opportunities through high school, through college to really realize like on stages, that's where I love to connect with people. That's where I found a lot of value in taking my skills and helping add value to people because I've always loved comedy and realizing that there's a lot of people who don't laugh very much in their day, not as much as I do and with my family and I realized, well, this is something I can actually help offer and realize that God uses comedy to just melt barriers, to break down walls in people's hearts so that they can better receive what he has for them. And so that's been my mission on stage is just helping connect with people and help use comedy to break down the barriers that they feel and kind of soften hearts over, you know, months and years of hardships that just kind of harden you, you know, and allow God to just kind of penetrate their heart with whatever he wants them to hear. And to be able to play a small part in that has been a lot of fun.
You say you were more scripted and I follow like you talked about in your book, and we'll get to your book in a little bit, about the actor's nightmare.
Yes.
Where you're on stage and you don't know your lines. And that's, I feel like that's been my recurring nightmare for the past 3 months.
It's a real thing. Literally. It's you just find yourself on stage in your dream and you're like, it looks like everybody else knows what's going on, but I don't know what's going on. Maybe I should, I don't know. I feel like I should know something, but I don't. It's horrible.
So is it like a nightmare in your improv where you're on stage and you literally have no lines? How do you, let's go into creative process when it comes to this. How do you go from not having any lines to being able to deliver something that people can enjoy?
Sure. I think it's just a different mentality because the context is completely different. In this actor's nightmare where you feel like there's something right to say, you just don't know what it is because there is, because the script has told you what to write or what to say and how to say it and where to be and where to stand and who to talk to. In improv, you obviously don't have that. So when you have the script, there is a right thing to do and say. And in improv, and much like real life, since we don't have a script, there actually isn't something telling us, of course, what to say and what to do. And so we have to go in it with a different mentality and not trying to figure out what the right thing is or even what the best thing is, but just being in the moment and making this decision to, like, you know what, I'm not necessarily gonna say the best thing or the right thing, but I just need to do it. I just need to say something and trust that the people I'm with are going to support me in that. And so it's a different mentality. And so it's been really exciting as I've grown in improv, and the more I've practiced and studied and learned, the more I've realized that, well, this is how we can succeed in life. Like if we take the same mentalities that make improv work on stage and apply them to how we approach our life and see our life as an improv scene where things come and go and we don't expect them to, and there isn't a set thing to do and say that we know to be right, then we can go through life with, I think, a lot less stress, and it's not this actor's nightmare anymore.
I just feel like this is a good segue. So maybe we'll just start talking about your book a little bit and kind of intertwine all of the different things, because I love how you started talking about Your book is called Thrown Off Script, which I think is really timely right now, just with everything with COVID and all of that. And our lives have literally been thrown off of the trajectory we thought it was going to be. And you talk about the four different responses to that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Honestly, the book was not written for this context. It was just one of those, I think God had a crazy sense of humor in his timing that the book would be released during the time when literally everyone across the globe is thrown off and realizing that any semblance of a script that they thought they had for their life, any plans that they thought they had, just are scrapped in an instant, really. And so I don't recommend, if you're writing a book, I don't recommend releasing it during a global pandemic. but I am curious to see what God's doing in this, because the message is certainly applicable. But I start off talking about just the way that you handle interruptions. I think there's like four different personality types based on how quickly you react to a change. And if you process it internally or you process it externally, or where your focus is, then I think it kind of results in four different personality types. So you've got the analyzer, which is kind of a delayed decision maker, and also very introspective and inward focused. You have so that's the analyzer. You have an agonizer who maybe makes a quick decision, that maybe that's not the catching point, but the catching point is then afterwards you start to regret. You start to feel like, oh no, I don't think that was the right choice. I don't think I shouldn't have said that. Oh man, what if I had done that instead? And so that's the agonizer. And then you have an arguer, where you just react quickly and focus it on anybody else, where if you might blame your circumstances on something or someone else, instead of taking personal responsibility and maybe changing what you have control over, you expect someone else to bring about the change. And then you have an avoider who doesn't want to make a decision, and the focus is outward, expecting someone else to make a decision and just roll with it. And so analyzer, agonizer, arguer, avoider, everybody I've talked to has fit into one of those four categories. I think there's a lot of analyzers, honestly, out there. I know I think I personally was probably an analyzer for a long time. I think doing improv has helped me to make a decision faster and just to go with it. But I've then kind of turned into a bit of an agonizer and be like, oh no, well maybe I should have done this. This would have been better. And so that's where I am.
I am definitely an analyzer.
The analyzer loves to have everything planned out, right? And just it thinks that there is some sort of best response or best course of action that honestly may or may not exist, but they think they can figure it out with just enough time, right? But time is not our friend, as we've learned.
Do you notice that you fit one of those with your improv on stage too?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the agonizer is probably where I at least started, because with improv you can't just sit there and analyze and figure out what to say meanwhile not saying anything. That doesn't work. So you have to learn just to go and trust that what you say is going to work. But I know often, and my teammate Jeremy on the team, he and I kind of commiserate about our first years. Afterwards, we would just regret something. I was like, oh, this would have been funnier if I had said this, you know, or, oh, that was okay, but it would have been so much better if we did this. So we called it Jeremy's Regret Corner, Mike's Regret Corner. As we would just kind of talk about all the things that we could have and should have and would have said if we had another chance. But that's not healthy. That just keeps you focused on the past and is not staying in the present. So I think I have that tendency, but it's things you have to learn to push through.
Do you find you're more self-conscious on stage or after the show?
I tell you what, I feel like I have a different personality on stage. Not that I'm being fake, but I think on stage is when I'm very open and transparent and daring and not self-conscious really at all. Like I'll do anything and whatever is best for the scene, whatever is funny, whatever's going to, you know, help people laugh. I'll do that. I'll be that and I'll be there. And so on stage is, yeah, it's not necessarily the time I feel self-conscious. I think off stage though, there are those times where it's like, oh, that I feel like I could have done better there. And also then because people, you know, see me high energy, pretty crazy on stage, they think that maybe I'm like that all the time and off stage, and I'm just not. And so, that's been a tension for me to kind of manage. Like, well, who are you? Are you really the funny, hilarious, high energy guy on stage? Or are you kind of the more, you know, willing to blend in with the background guy off stage? And, are you serious? Are you funny? Actually, that is, it's funny about the book. Cause for a while I was trying to figure out, how do I promote this book? Cause like, is it funny? Is it a comedy book? Or is it like a serious book about how to develop your relationship with Christ in hardships, you know? And I was like, how do I communicate what this book is? And I realized through praying about that and thinking about that, I was like, God was telling me just one word, and the word was genuine. And realizing that's what I have to be in real life, that both of those things can be true about me. Both of those things are true about the book. So just being genuine is the most important thing in communicating the truths of this book and even this conversation. So that I'm thankful God kind of brought that word to mind, and it wasn't a matter of picking which one, and they can both be true.
Yeah. Identity is a huge thing I've been wrestling with this past year, between, you know, being a mom, a podcaster, someone who enjoys theater, someone who is a nurse. And one of the things that God is teaching me is that I need to make sure my identity is anchored in something safe. So if I lost, hopefully not, but if I lost my children and my identity was all in my parenting, my motherhood, then where would I be? I would be completely shattered. Mm. And if I lost my voice where I couldn't speak anymore, then as a singer or as someone who does a podcast, where would I find my identity? So have you had to struggle with figuring out where your identity lies and where it can be safe versus what your identity is as an improv actor?
It's tough to have that persona that people enjoy so much and not tie your identity to who people think you are, because that just causes this tension of like, well, now everything I'm doing and my identity has to be tied up in this perception that other people have of me. And just being genuine, like we were mentioning earlier, is such an anchor for me. Just that word of being genuine is such an anchor. And I love the metaphor of an anchor, because the anchor keeps you in one place so that you're free to operate wherever you are, like on the boat. Like you're free to do whatever you need to do on the boat, knowing that you're not actually going anywhere that you don't want to go. That anchor is there. So the anchor, actually, we kind of think of it like a ball and chain, like, oh, if you're anchored, then, you know, you're stuck there. But it's so beautiful to think like, oh, no, the anchor just keeps you from going somewhere unsafe. Mm-hmm. And you're free. It actually offers you freedom to do whatever you need to do where you're floating. And so I've been careful to not find my identity in my creativity, and because creativity comes and goes, you know, it flows sometimes. And so if I consider myself as my identity as a creator, then on days where I'm not as creative or I'm dry or that starts to reflect on my personality, on my identity, right? And so I think it's just a constant going back to Jesus and being like, God, you know, you've given me the gifts that you've given me. And if I'm being honestly, sometimes I'm thankful for that. And sometimes I wish maybe I didn't have what you've given me to do. But God, please help me to just find purpose in what you've given me to do for your glory and not for, for my own reputation or anything. And I'm not always great at that, but that has to be kind of a daily prayer to keep grounded and anchored, like you said.
I love that quote. The keeps you from going somewhere you don't want to go and keeps you in a safe spot.
Yeah. God's a good God, man. So much of what we see as restrictions and on our life and all these rules are just God's way of keeping you focused on him and from straying off, because we stray so easily. Like left on our own, we're going to go every which way. But in the book, actually, I talk about this a metaphor of you know, that the game where you play maybe at camp or something, and you're blindfolded and you have a partner who's trying to guide you through this obstacle course, right? And you're blindfolded, so you got to listen. You got to listen to your partner as they tell you, all right, you got to step over this cone. Okay, now there's a log here. You got to, okay, step over and then go to the right. And so the way to succeed in that game is to not get all, you know, prideful and stubborn about it. It's like, no, I don't think there's a log there. I'm going to go anyway. And then you trip and you fall. But instead, going in with this mindset of listening, of course, and accepting that whatever he says is true, and it's for your benefit. It's not because, you know, he's on a power trip to just, he says jump and you say how high. It's all the while bringing you over and around and through these obstacles closer to himself. And I think that's what our life is like. I think it's like this obstacle course that we don't see the big picture. We can't see the whole course. He can. He's on the hill and he can see the whole thing, and he's just bringing us closer and closer to himself. And if we try to say no and struggle and try to go our own way, it just looks as foolish as someone who's trying to just, you know, get through the course without listening to anybody.
So speaking of obstacle courses, what has been your biggest thrown off script moment of your life?
Oh man. Well, I mean, I hope it's not too trite to say the whole COVID thing is thrown me off, but for real though, man, it's crazy. For me, the biggest impact has been, doing, you know, full-time improv comedy ministry means going and making a living off of live events. And so there's no live events. So I'm home all the time now. Fortunately, my wife works, but what that meant was from March through June, I was the stay-at-home parent homeschooling my kid. And it would get depressing for me to think about how many hundreds of hours I, quote unquote, lost. If I'm being honest, I felt like I lost all of these hours that my kid would normally be at school, and my book is launching and all the hours that need to get put into that. All of a sudden now I'm not the traveling improv comedian. I'm not the up and coming author releasing a book. And instead I'm a professional bologna sandwich maker and screen time monitor. Right. So it's, and so thinking about all the hundreds of hours that I would have had while she was at school and now it's lost, that was the biggest moment of like, oh man, like this is completely different than I expected. And so I really had to, I mean, I can't tell you, like my wife actually read passages from the book I wrote and said, hey, you need to hear this. Like, oh no, who wrote that? That's stupid. I don't want to hear it. And so it was really interesting of God forcing me to practice what I preach, so to speak, and readjust to the new reality. And that's where we all are, right? We've got a new reality and I think it's a waste of time to try to get back on track. I think it's misguided for us to think that we can get back to where we were. And I think the sooner that we can adapt and change to the present and where we actually are, the sooner we can actually make progress and go the direction we need to go.
So when you were able to switch your mindset, what has been the thing you've been most thankful for with COVID?
Man, thankfulness is important, isn't it? I love thankfulness is the way I think about it is reminding yourself of what's true. And because there are things that are still true from before COVID, and there are now things that are now true because of COVID. And so we need to remind ourselves of those true things, or else we're just going to suffer and shrivel up and die. And so I've been thankful that for in those two categories, things that are still true, right? I'm thankful I have my health. And I'm thankful. I know not everyone is as fortunate but I'm thankful to have been, to have enjoyed that health. And I'm thankful for my family. Now that is true. My family has a lot more time together and I've been able to go through this summer. Normally summer I'm gone, you know, 20, 25 days a month. And now we've enjoyed exploring our region every weekend, going on new trips and day trips here and there, just exploring and as a family. I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful for a lot of connections that have been able to be made and really kind of digging into the friendships, you know, that you really want to, that before you were just too busy, right? But now everyone has more time, perhaps, if they've allotted for it. And so really establishing those connections. So I think I need to be more thankful, to be honest with you. I would do well to start each day with thinking about like 3, 5, 7, 10 things I'm thankful for, just to remind me of what's true.
I've had to do something like that where I've not even necessarily thankfulness, which is a big part of it, but just even seeing progress. Like a week ago, X, Y, Z was stressing me out, and now I'm at this point of either conquering whatever that anxiety was or seeing growth or something like that. So I've also had to do that.
That's great. Being thankful for growth. That's a great point. Cause it's so easy to think about like, well, where you want to be or where you could be, and not recognizing that, well, you've actually come quite a long ways, and being thankful for what God has taught you and brought you through to even get to the point where you are. Yeah. That's awesome.
Kind of learning that instant gratification is not always going to last very long.
No, not at all.
We're learning that for sure right now. But yeah, just like those baby steps and seeing how you can climb a little bit at a time. And if you just keep looking forward, when you look back like a week, a month, a year later, how much growth you've done and how far you've gone.
Oh, yeah.
That's been a big thing I've seen in myself, just being able to put that perspective on instead of wanting everything to be easy and happen right now.
Sure. Yeah. I think God is doing some serious parenting of everybody right now. You know, it makes a lot of sense that, you know, as a parent, you're like, oh no, you can't have that now. You got to wait for later. It's easy to say that. And then God says it to us and we're like, wait, no, I want it now. You're like, oh, well, I guess we have more growing to do.
I think the stuff that I say to my kids is really just God talking to me. Like,
oh, yeah.
Stuff that I say to them, I'm just like, I needed to hear that in this moment. And I am parenting myself right now because, yeah, God definitely uses my kids' behavior to highlight where I need to grow as well. So how did you go from doing improv to getting the little baby of a book idea, like the germ of an idea of a book? How did you go from doing this to, hey, maybe this can apply to real life and encourage other people?
Well, that's a great question. I think for anyone listening who is interested in writing a book, I think everyone has a book inside them. I know that's been said before, but I think it's true. And I think a good way to identify that is to ask yourself, what do people recognize about you and ask you, hey, how do you do that? Or, hey, like, why is that so easy for you? Or can you teach me how to do that? And then if you have, like, if someone asks you that three times, if you get three different people asking you something like that, that's now something to develop into a book. And so for me, it was the case of just kind of adapting and going with the flow. I think, like I said, it wasn't always my personality. And so through doing improv, as it became more of a building up of a confidence in new situations and uncertain situations, it got me to realize, I think a lot of it's just my improv. And there are, I've taught improv classes with the point of use these skills to become better in your workplace, for example, or be a better leader. And enough of that got me to think, well, I mean, this is, yeah, but not just in your workplace are these skills useful, just in life. And so it floated around my brain a bit of just like, oh yeah, improv skills as life. It's not a unique concept to me. There's, I think improvisers across the world understand the power of improv to help you navigate life. But for me, it was just this, but with the perspective as a Christian to realize, well, the point isn't just to navigate life and be better at when things go off plan, you know, but the point is actually to grow closer to Jesus. Then I was like, well, I mean, using improv to grow closer to Jesus, that would be a good book. It'd be interesting. Well, let me look and see, like, what does Jesus have to say about improv? And of course, he doesn't mention, you know, improv. He doesn't say yes and is the first rule of improv. But you look at his life and he handles interruptions like nonstop. He gets interrupted all the time. There's even this passage in Luke Luke chapter 8, where it's one interruption after the next, one interruption. And it's a string of this like really bad day that would just make me go crazy. But Jesus ministers through it all. And I'm like, oh man, he is improvising. Jesus is improvising his way through the Gospels and ministering, shepherding all of these people along the way. That's what we need to do. And so it's like, oh man, I need to look into that more. That's got to be a book. And I knew that it had to be written when it went from being a good idea to what I call a moral imperative. Like it would be nice if I wrote this book to it would be wrong of me if I don't write this book. Mm-hmm. And that's when I felt the weight of God's calling in this area of like, write this book, use your experience, help people grow closer to Jesus through these unexpected times, using the skills you've learned in improv. And it was like, if I don't do that, it would be like me trying to run, you know, catch a ship to Tarshish and run in the opposite direction. And so once that was the case, I was like, all right, well, let's do this.
So one of my favorite, I'm probably about a quarter of the way in. And
oh, wow. You've made good time.
Yeah. It's a good thing to listen to when you're doing dishes. I do the audiobooks, people. So you read it, you narrate it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really fun to hear how you wanted it to be.
Yeah. I've been excited for the audiobook version for a long time. I've always felt like it was made to be listened to, made to be heard, just because I don't know how to not write in just a very conversational style. It's not very formal at all. It's just very conversational. And there's some improv scenes in there that just have characters with voices. And it's like, you know, it's fun to read. It's a fun read. But I was like, oh no, when the audiobook version, when I get to record that, then I get to infuse it with all those accents and little asides to the reader and things like that. So it's a lot of fun. It's a fun listen.
I highly recommend it. And sorry, one of the quotes that really struck a chord with me was the bring a brick, not a cathedral.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I can say that because I didn't come up with that. That's an old improv adage. That's not me. That's just, it's anonymous at this point. I think I haven't found a source for it. But yeah, bring a brick, not a cathedral. And I love because it's just this kind of a two-sided punch of wisdom for us. Because on one hand, bring a brick, not a cathedral. We are realizing in 2020 with COVID striking how many cathedrals we've built as these plans in our life and these expectations we have for how the year's going to go. This cathedral worth of like all of these details and this and like all of these, you know, roof tiles and the stained glass window and this color here and these pews are this color and this fabric, basically as a metaphor for all these plans that we have that really there's no wiggle room. And if anything goes wrong, then we just feel like completely thrown off. And so that quote reminds us to, you know what? Don't bring a cathedral in an improv scene. If someone comes in with this grand plan of who they are, who the other players are, what they're going to do together, there leaves no room for creativity, no room for inspiration, no room for exploration. And that person basically becomes the boss and just tells people what to do. And they're not going to last long in improv. Their friends are going to not play with them anymore. But instead, bring a brick. Just bring your willingness and just a seed of an idea, something of value and the willingness to use it. And then the people that you're with bring their brick and then you put them together and you realize, oh, well, these fit together well like this. Oh, this would be cool if they fit together this way. And by bringing a brick after brick after brick after brick, you might build a cathedral like you had kind of imagined, or it might be a fire station, you know, something completely different. But when you look at it, you realize that it is the accumulation of everybody's input. And so I think we're realizing that in this life, we can't have a cathedral because God is in the business of taking down our cathedrals and replacing them with his plans and his glory. And so the best we can do is bring a brick. And then the flip side, I said it's like a two-punch quote. There's two valuable lessons from it. So the first one is just have this loose grip on your plans, right? Not this fully constructed plan. The other side of it is, you know what? Sometimes you don't even know what to do. And you think that you need maybe, if I don't have this cathedral idea or goal, then I don't know what to do, anything to do. And so you feel stuck. You actually feel like you don't know what to do. You can't do anything. And so then the encouragement there is, you know what? You don't need to have a cathedral. Just bring a brick. Just bring a brick. And I think there's so many people right now who are just left in this. They're standing in the middle of the rubble of their cathedral. And they're like, I can't rebuild this. What am I going to do? And so the encouragement there is, you know what? Just bring a brick. You don't have to bring a cathedral. Just bring a brick. And tomorrow, bring another brick. Bring a brick to your relationship. You know, even if your spouse isn't bringing a brick to theirs, you know, bring a brick to the meeting. Even if you don't have the grand idea of the best way to solve a problem. And so bring a brick, not a cathedral, two really poignant lessons that I've had to really internalize in that little quote.
I think that's a great dance of what I've been trying to learn through this whole podcasting process. Like I said at the beginning with my intro, these episodes are me searching through, sometimes it's internally, sometimes these are solo episodes, sometimes I get to talk with amazing people like Mike, and just get to see what faithfulness looks like in real life, not just throwing it around in our Christianese world where we say God is faithful or I am faithful to God, but what does that look like? And so much of when we talk about faithfulness, we think about God's, but I've learned also like we have a responsibility to be faithful to God. And that brick makes it seem a lot more achievable, a lot more achievable. Sure. And that's all we need to do, because whether or not we bring the brick, which it'll give God more glory if we do, but God's faithfulness doesn't rely on ours.
That's great.
And God will still build that cathedral or that firehouse or that hospital or whatever, whether or not we provide the brick. But when we do provide the brick, we get to say that God got to use us. We got to be a part of that.
That's great. Yeah, it's such a great reminder as you're not faithful to have to provide the finished product, but yeah, just to, you know, bring a brick where your willingness and your value meet. That's your brick. If you have something of value, and we all do, and you have a willingness to contribute it and let it go and be used however God wants it to be used, there you have your brick. And then you know what? You go get another one the next day. That's awesome.
Do you have any specific examples of how God has used any of your bricks?
Ooh, let's see. How has God used my bricks? The writing of the book has been a long one, and sometimes it's been a some things have kind of flowed really easily, and sometimes it's been a grind. And honestly, the writing of the book, I feel like I'm a content creator. I love creating content. And so that, for the most part, goes pretty easily for me. But it's the spreading the word about it, the word promotion. I don't really like that word, but for lack of a better one, sure, promoting the book, that has been a real process for me of like, oh man, I don't like doing this, but you know, if I just do this little bit today, if I reach out to this person today, one brick at a time, I'm like, God, I'm going to need you to like do this miracle. You know, it reminds me of someone talking about how you don't need to feed the 5,000. That's God's job. But you are in charge of finding the loaves and the fish, you know, that miracle that Jesus did where he told the disciples, all right, you feed the people. And they're like, well, we don't have enough food to feed these people. But he said, go see what you have. And they went and they found 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. It's bringing a brick, you know, it's like, we've got these bricks. And so, through the things that I've needed to do, not just as an author, but even as a parent, being home 24/7 with my kid in this time, those bricks of like, okay, you're not going to, you know, get done everything that you think you need to get done. Let's just do what you know to do now. And so my brick, as a parent in this time might be, all right, let's go play outside. Just go play outside together, bring the soccer ball. And that's my brick for the day. That's like, you know, I'm pouring into her, spending some quality time. Let's go blueberry picking, you know, and that's a brick. And I don't have to have the whole day planned out. I don't need to have this whole, like, I'm going to enrich my child's education with this time that we have, you know, to last for all eternity. You know, that's just too much. How about just a brick of like, all right, what can I do now? What's the next best step right now? And that's all the energy I need to summon for that. And it's like, God, please help me. I don't have enough energy for more than just this one brick. And so, he's been faithful in that, and I can always do better, but that's where I've found needing to bring my bricks is these things that I just don't want to do. Honestly, it's hard, and, but it needs to be done. And so kind of letting God multiply the efforts that I do bring, and let him make the miracle out of it.
So we're about at our closing time, and you have chosen Proverbs 16:9 for your closing verse. Can you explain the thought behind that?
Yeah, that says we can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. And I think if Bring a Brick, Not a Cathedral had a Bible verse equivalent, it would be this one. We can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. It sounds kind of foreboding. If you interpret it that way, where it sounds like, well, you can make your plans, but God's going to smash them and do whatever he wants with them. And I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true to the nature of God. I think there's encouragement there of like, we can make our plans, and we should make plans. Like, plans are good. I think it's important, but with the mentality of of seeking out the Lord's will. If we can make our plans, but we can take comfort in the fact that God determines our steps. And so we don't have to be worried about making a misstep and falling off our path and being completely so thrown off that we're too far gone from him, that he determines our steps. And yeah, we do need to be aware of the fact that it may not look the way that we expected it to, but we can take comfort in the fact that he is there next to us, making sure that we don't fall off into the ditch.
I can't help but see God's sense of humor in putting out your book now.
It is hilarious and sad sometimes. But yeah, no, it's I'm excited to see what he's doing. I've already been encouraged by hearing so many people say, oh man, this is obviously, you know, what I need to hear right now. And so I've been so encouraged to hear from people who say, yeah, this is what I need right now. And yep. So it may not be the financially the best timing. It may not be logistically the best timing, but for God's impact and the work he's doing in people's lives, like, man, it can't be a better time. So just got to lean into that.
So those of you listening, you can go to my show notes. We'll have a link to the book on, is Amazon typically yes. Where you want people to buy it from? So
sure.
I'll have the Amazon link for the hard copy, or I'll put the Audible on there too, which I highly recommend. If you're listening to a podcast, you're probably going to enjoy an audiobook. So I'm definitely going to recommend that one. I'll also put the website for 321 Improv for whenever things open up again for things.
We'll have a good time. We'll have a party.
Yes. Awesome. So all of that is in the show notes. I know I've said this, it's like a broken record, but this book has already touched my life in dealing with COVID, but also in parenting and all the other areas where I try to hold on to too much control. So I recommend it. It's great. I know Mike personally, and I think genuine is a good word for the book and for him and all of that. So
praise God. That's awesome.
All right. So we are going to end with Proverbs 16:9, which goes so well with thrown off script. We can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps.
This has been episode 33 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast entitled Thrown Off Script with Mike Dominey. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/33. Follow us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.